This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Emily Windsnap and the Monster from the Deep by Liz Kessler. Read for you by Finty Williams. Below the thunders of the upper deep, far, far beneath in the abysmal sea, his ancient, dreamless, uninvaded sleep, the Kraken sleepeth. From The Kraken by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Chapter 1. Close your eyes. Think of the most beautiful place you can imagine. Are you seeing golden beaches, gorgeous clear blue sea, perfect sky? Oh, keep your eyes closed. Now multiply it by about 100, and you're halfway to picturing what my new home was like. The softest, whitest sand, palm trees that reached lazily out from the beaches, tall rocky arches cusping the bays, sea that sparkled like crystals in the sunlight. All thanks to Neptune. He'd sent me here with my mum and dad to start a new life, somewhere we could live together, somewhere my secret would be safe. One of Neptune's guards, Archival, accompanied us here. He's a merman. He swam beside our little sailing boat all the way, swishing his long black hair behind him and occasionally ducking under, flicking his tail in the air, silver and sharp like a dagger. We edged slowly into a horseshoe-shaped bay, filled with shiny turquoise water. Soft foamy waves gently stroked the white sand. A few boats were dotted about in the bay, half-sunken, silently sloping. Some were modern yachts, others great wooden craft that looked like ancient pirate ships. A tall rocky arch marked the end of the bay. Through it, the sand and sea continued round a corner. I caught my breath as I stood and stared. "Shake a tail, someone," Archival called up. "I could use some help here." I leaned across to help him pull the boat up alongside a wooden jetty, as Dad swam round to the back and tied the ropes to a buoy. Mum was still inside with Millie. That's a friend from Brightport. She used to read fortunes on the pier. She did a tarot reading for Archival before we left, and he liked it so much he invited her to come with us. She said she'd have to let the cards decide, so she set the pack out in a star shape and sat looking at it in silence for about 10 minutes, nodding slowly. "Well, it's obvious what I have to do. You'll never catch me ignoring a call from the Ten of Cups," she said enigmatically before throwing her black cape over her shoulder and going home to pack her things. She says everything enigmatically, Millie does. I've learnt to just nod and look as though I know what she's on about. Archival swam round to the side of the boat. "This is it, then," he said. "North Bay, All Points Island." "Why is it called All Points Island?" I asked. "It's right in the centre of the triangle." He stretched out an arm as he spun slowly round in a circle, "where the three points meet." The Bermuda Triangle. I shivered. He told us about it on the way here, about the boats and planes that had mysteriously disappeared inside it. An ocean liner had been found totally intact, but utterly deserted. 20 tables were set out for dinner. Another ship was found with skeletons on the decks, its sails ripped to shreds all around them. Others had vanished without trace, often after frantic mayday calls from pilots and fishermen who were never seen again. I didn't know whether to believe the stories at first, but something had happened out at sea. We'd been sailing along normally, the swell rising and falling, the boat gently making its way through the peaks and troughs. Then it changed. The water went all glassy. The engine cut out. Everything died. Even my watch stopped working. It felt as if the sea had frozen, almost as if time itself had frozen. Then Archival yanked his long hair into a ponytail with some string and disappeared under the water. A few minutes later, we got moving again, gliding silently across the glassy sea. "That was it," he called up. "Bermuda Triangle. That's what'll protect you from the outside world now. No one knows how to get through it except for a few chosen merfolk." He threw a rope onto the deck. "Well, a few chosen merfolk and... no. I'd better not tell you about that."
"What? Tell me,"
Dad turned up then. I hope you're not filling my daughter's head with any more of your lurid tales, Archie, he warned him. She has enough nightmares as it is. Archie lowered his voice. Just be careful, he said. That glassy plain marks out the triangle, but it's only like that on the surface. It's a raging torrent below, a huge well leading down to the deepest depths of the ocean. And you don't want to go disappearing down a hole like that. I rubbed at the goose pimples crawling up my arms. We'd sailed on calmly after that, slipping through water that grew clearer and lighter every moment, melting from deep navy to a soft baby blue. Gradually the island came into view. It was quite small, perhaps only a few miles across. A tall cliff at one end, a couple of lower peaks at the other, and a low flat stretch in between. As we drew closer, I could see the coastline was made up of long white bays fringed with tall palm trees and clusters of rocks and arches. It looked like a postcard. I always thought those pictures must be made up somehow, and that when you got there you'd just find a clump of high-rise apartments next to a building site. But it was real, and it was my new home. Where's your dad? Mum joined me on the deck, straightening her skirt and bending down to check her reflection in a metal railing. I pointed ahead, helping Archie. Mum looked slowly round the bay. I think I've died and gone to heaven, she murmured as she grabbed the railing. Someone's going to have to pinch me.
I'll do it.
Dad's head poked out of the water, a glint in his eyes as he wiped floppy, wet hair off his forehead. Mum smiled back at him. A second later, the side doors crashed open and Millie clambered out. Tell you something, she said, rubbing her large stomach. That slippery ale mixture works wonders on the seasickness. She covered her mouth as she hiccuped. Especially washed down with a spot of brandy. Now, where are we? She squinted into the sunlight. That's it, she said, pointing across at a wooden ship lying on a slant in the bay. It had three tall masts, polished pine railings and a name printed on the side. Fortuna. That's what? I asked. Your new home. Archie told me. I looked at Mum. What's wrong with King of the Sea? Well, that's what our boat's called. I've lived on it with Mum all my life. Millie pinched my cheek as she squeezed past me. Well, your dad can't live with you on a regular boat, can he now? Don't worry. I'll look after the place for you. Dad swam round to the side, staring across at Fortuna.
Flipping fins. Bit different from where I spent the last 12 years, he said as he reached up to help Mum off the boat.
Dad was in prison before we came here. He's not a criminal or anything. Well, he broke the law, but it was a stupid law. He married a human. Well, that's my mum. He's a merman. Makes it a bit difficult when she can't swim and he can't go on land, but they manage somehow. She used to be a brilliant swimmer till she was hypnotized into being afraid of water. Neptune did that, to keep them apart. She's still nervous about it now, but Dad said he's going to teach her again. Mum hitched up her skirt and stepped across onto the jetty. It led all the way out to the ship, bouncing and swaying on the water as we made our way along it. I climbed aboard our new home. It was huge. At least 20 meters long, with shiny brown wooden decks and maroon sails wrapped into three neat bundles. It lay perfectly still at a small tilt lodged in the sand. It looked as if it had been waiting for us. I stepped into the cabin in the middle of the boat and found myself in a kitchen with steps leading forward and behind. I tried the back way first. It led to a small cabin with a bed, a beanbag and a polished wooden cupboard. Circles of wavy light bounced onto the bed from portholes on either side. Definitely my bedroom. I ran through to the other side. Mum was twirling round in a big open living room, a table on one side, a comfy-looking sofa tucked snugly into the other. What will we do with all this space? She gasped. Sunny golden rays beamed into the room from skylights all along the ceiling. Ahead, a door led to another bedroom. What about Dad? I asked. How's he going to live here? Before she had a chance to reply, A large trapdoor in the floor bounced open and he appeared below us. That was when I noticed that there were trapdoors everywhere, leading down from each room into another one below. The ship was lodged in the seabed, with a whole floor half submerged, so you could swim around in it underwater. "You want to see the rest of your new home?" Dad's eyes shone wide and happy. I inched down through the trapdoor to join him. Almost as soon as I did, my legs started to tingle. Then they went numb. Finally, they disappeared altogether. My tail had formed. It does that when I go in water. Sometimes I'm a mermaid, sometimes I'm a girl. That's what happens when a woman and a merman have a baby. I'd only found out recently, when I went swimming with school. Thinking about that first time made me tremble. In fact, the thought of Brightport High made me feel sick, even now. I dreaded going there. School itself didn't bother me, only some of the people. Or one in particular. Mandy Rushton. Just thinking about her was enough to make my skin prickle. All those times she'd humiliated me, calling me names in front of the class, tripping me up, stealing my friends, turning them against me. I used to have nightmares about her staring at me inside a huge tank, calling me a freak. I'd wake up cold and sweating and then have to face her all over again in real life. At least I'd got my own back in the end when I turned into a mermaid in the pool right in front of her eyes. It was worth all the bullying just to see the look of stunned silence slapped across her face that day. No, it wasn't. The only thing that made the bullying worth it was knowing I would never, ever have to see her again. Bullies like Mandy Rushton were a thing of the past. "Bit bigger than King of the Sea, eh?" Dad said as I lowered myself down towards him. He took hold of my hand and we swam round the lower deck together. "Look." He pulled me through an archway in the centre and through purple sea fans that hung like drapes from the ceiling. Fern-like and feathery, they swayed delicately with the movement of the water. Dad squeezed my hand. A couple of red and white fish swam in through an empty porthole, pausing to nibble gently at the side of the boat before gliding between the drapes. One of them swam up to slide along its tail. "Glass-eyed snappers," I said as he flicked it away. Dad smiled. He'd taught me the names of all sorts of fish on the way here. I swam back to the trapdoor and hoisted myself up. "Mum, it's amazing," I said as I watched my tail form back into my legs. Mum stared. She obviously hadn't got used to it yet. She'd only seen it happen a few times. Then Dad joined us and Mum turned to sit with her legs dangling over the trapdoor, gazing at him. He reached onto her lap to hold her hands. She didn't seem to notice the bottom of her skirt was soaking wet, just grinned stupidly down at him while he grinned stupidly up at her. I realised I was grinning stupidly at both of them. "Well, most people don't have to wait till they're 12 before they get to see their parents together. I never knew it would make me feel so warm, so complete." I decided to leave them to it. They wouldn't notice if I went out to explore. They'd hardly noticed anything except each other since we set off to come here. Not that I minded. After all, I'd nearly got imprisoned myself getting them back together. I guess they wouldn't mind a little time on their own. "I'm going out for a bit," I called, "just for a look round." "Okay, darling," Mum replied dreamily. "Be careful," Dad added. I nearly laughed as I climbed out of the boat. I looked out at the turquoise water and marshmallow sand. "Careful? What of? What could possibly hurt me here?" I walked along the beach for a while, watching the sun glint and dance on the water in between the ships. The sand was so white. Back home, or what used to be home, in Brightport, the sand was usually a dirty beige colour. This sand was like flour. My feet melted into it as I walked. I could hardly feel the ground. A gentle breeze made the sun's warmth feel like a hairdryer on my body. Wading into the sea, I couldn't help glancing around to check there was no one around. Just habit. I still hadn't got used to the idea that being a mermaid didn't make me a freak here, on this secret island where merfolk and humans live together. The only place of its kind in the world, protected by the magic of the Bermuda Triangle. There were some people up on the cliff behind me, standing in front of a cluster of white buildings. For a moment, I considered scrambling up the hill to join them. Then I looked out at the water and saw faces. And then tails. Merpeople! I had to meet them. As my legs formed back into my tail, I wondered if there were any others on the island like me, half-human, half-merperson. That would be so cool. Either way, at least I could live here with my mum and dad without us having to hide what we were. Shoals of tiny fish escorted me out towards the group, gliding and weaving around me. Thin black bodies with see-through fins. They led me along through the warm water, slowing down every now and then, almost as though they were making sure I could keep up. Wavy lines rippled along the seabed like tire tracks. A troop of silver jacks swam past me in a line, each one silhouetted against the sand below, their shadows doubling their gang's numbers. I flipped over onto my back, flicking my tail every now and then to propel myself lazily along, until I remembered I was meant to be looking for the merpeople. I stopped and looked round. The island was a speck in the distance, miles away. How long had I been swimming? The merpeople had moved on. A chill gripped my chest as I realized I was gliding over some dark rocks, hard, grey, jagged boulders with plants lining every crack. Fat grey fish with wide-open mouths and spiky backs glared at me through cold eyes. Long trails of seaweed stretched like giant snakes along the seabed, reaching upwards in a clutch of leaves and stems. As I hovered in the water, I could feel myself being pulled along by a current. It felt like a magnet, drawing me towards it slowly at first, then getting stronger. I swam hard against it, but it was too strong. It was reeling me in like a fishing line. Blackness swirled ahead of me. Then I remembered. The triangle. Everything sped up like a film on fast forward. Fish zoomed past, weeds and plants lay horizontal, stretched out towards the edge of the triangle, the well that led to the deepest depths of the ocean. My chest thumping, my throat closing up, I worked my arms like rotary blades, pounding through the water. My tail flicked rapidly as I fought to get away. I swam frantically. Keep going. Keep going. But every time I started to make progress, the current latched onto me again, dragging me back out to sea. We were locked in a battle, a tug of war between me and... And what? Fear surged through me like an electric current, powering my aching arms for one final push. It was just enough. I was getting away. The current loosened its grip. The sea soon became shallow again and calm, as though nothing had happened. I wasn't taking any risks, though. Catapulting myself through the water, I swam back to our bay and made it to the ship, breathless. I pulled myself out and sat panting on the deck while my legs returned. Mum poked her head out of the cabin. "You okay, Chuck?" she asked, passing me a towel. I nodded, too out of breath to reply. I rubbed myself dry as I followed her back into the kitchen. "Here you are," she said, passing me a couple of onions and a knife. "Might as well make yourself useful." Then she looked at me more carefully. "Are you sure you're all right?" Was I? That was a good question. I opened my mouth to answer her, but stopped when I heard voices coming from below deck. "Who's that?" "Oh, visitors, downstairs with your dad. They've been coming all afternoon." I gently shut the trap door. I couldn't face new people yet. I didn't even want Dad to hear what I had to say. I don't know why. Something to do with how happy he was and the fact that he kept giving me all these smiley, loving looks. Well, he would do, wouldn't he? He hadn't seen me since I was a baby, and I didn't want him to know his baby wasn't quite so happy right now, or quite so sure about this new dream home of ours. My hands shook as I started to peel the onions. "Mum," I said carefully. "Hmm?" she replied through a teaspoon lodged in her mouth. "She says it stops your eyes watering." "You know that stuff Archie told us on the way here, about the big well in the ocean?"
"That big well in the ocean,"
she replied, the spoon waggling about as she spoke. "What?" She pulled the spoon out of her mouth. "The big well in the ocean?" she repeated. "The one that leads to the deepest depths of the ocean," I added, as a shudder snaked through my body. "I felt something just now, pulling me out to sea."
Emily, you're not to go out there, she said, grabbing my arms. You stay close to the island. The shudder jammed in my throat.
It was really strong, Mum, I said quietly.
Of course it's really strong. It's protecting the whole area. You know what Archie said. Do you hear me, Emily?
I nodded, swallowing hard. Yes, I hear you.
She stared at me, holding my eyes with hers. I am not going to lose you, Emily. You promise me you'll keep away from there.
I promise.
She pulled me towards her and hugged me tight. Good, right, she said.
You silly thing, you're shaking.
She squeezed me tighter. Come on, it's okay. Let's get this veg done and we'll try not to think about big wells in the deepest depths of the ocean, okay?
Okay.
I forced a smile. I'll try. We worked in silence after that. I couldn't think of anything to say. All I could think was that it would take more than chopping a few onions to make me forget the fear I'd felt out there, clutching and snapping at me like a shark trying to drag me to the bottom of the sea. M.
Mermaids? Yeah, right. You're as bad as my dad. He reckons they're real too. Reckons he's seen one. He says it was on his way back from the fisherman. That's our local pub. Clear as day, he says. Well, that goes to show how reliable your vision is after 10 pints of Guinness, my mum says. You couldn't even tell it was the middle of the night. Clear as day, he says again. It's just an expression, love. Mum says he'll be seeing more than mermaids if he doesn't start pulling his weight. Then she has a go at me for leaving my girl chat magazine lying around. Yell their heads off at each other and nag me. That's all they seem to do nowadays. They didn't always argue. Not this much, anyway. It's been like this ever since we heard that the council are planning to pull down our home. We live on a pier, and they say it's not safe. Problem is, my parents work on the pier too. So that's job and home gone in one swift swing of a crane, or blast of dynamite, however they do it. The place is a dump, anyway. I don't care what happens. Well, maybe I do a bit. But who cares what I think? So today, right, Dad charges upstairs to the flat at lunchtime. He usually goes to the pub, but he says he's been somewhere else. Where? Mum eyes him suspiciously. Look, he says. He's got a magazine in his hand, a brochure. Mum takes it off him. Mermaid tours, she says. Oh, for Lord's sake, Jack, when will you grow up? No, it's not, he blusters. It's just the name of the company, Maureen. It caught my attention, that's all. He grabs the brochure back off Mum, rifles through it as though he's looking for something in particular. I have been looking for something to take our minds off everything. I thought this might help. There, he says suddenly, opening it up and slamming it onto the table. Mum sits down to read it. I have a look too. Not that I'm interested or anything. I just want to know what the fuss is about, that's all. A cruise, Jack? Mum looks at him in this way she has, with her tongue in her cheek and her eyebrows raised so high they nearly disappear into her hair. We're on the verge of losing our livelihood, and you want us to spend every last penny we haven't even got on some ridiculous holiday. Dad takes a deep breath. Maureen, he says in a rumble. When he speaks again, he says each word on its own like he's talking staccato. What kind of fool do you take me for exactly? Mum gets up from the table. You really don't want me to answer that, Jack. Look! Dad suddenly shouts. Dad never shouts. We both look. He's pointing at the page. I'll read it to you, shall I? And before we have time to answer, he starts reading. Enter our exclusive competition and you could win one of our superlative mermaid tours holidays. Every month one lucky reader will win this fantastic prize. Just complete the following phrase in 30 words or less. Mermaid tours are the best holidays around because. Remember to tell us which of our fabulous cruise holidays you'd like to go on and post the coupon off to us. You could be our next lucky winner. Dad puts the magazine back on the table. Well? Mum says, picking up the magazine. A competition. Why didn't you just say so? I roll my eyes at Dad. He clamps his jaw shut and doesn't say anything. Mum and Dad are complete fanatics about competitions. Well, especially Mum. She reckons she's got a system. It works as well. Our home is littered with teddy bears and toasters and electronic dictionaries she's won from stupid competitions in magazines. We had 3 vacuum cleaners at one point. She even won a weekend break once. Not that I know much about that. She and Dad went without me. I had to stay at home with a babysitter while they went off to live it up in Paris. I still haven't properly forgiven them. Not that I should have been too surprised. I'm always bottom of the list round here. But this, well, I wouldn't mind a cruise holiday. Lying on a sun lounger on an enormous ship gliding through the ocean. Hot sun, warm pool, all the food I can eat, non-stop sweets and no one to stop me drinking as much pop as I want. I've heard about these holidays. It's all included. You know how good you are at these things, Dad says, edging closer to Mum. Don't try flattery, Jack, Mum says. It doesn't suit you. But I know she'll do it. She can't resist. I catch Dad's eye. He winks and I half smile back. Well, he's still stupid believing in mermaids. Later that day, I catch Mum leafing through the brochure. Look at this one, she says. I glance over her shoulder. Bermuda and the Caribbean. Experience the magic for yourself. Enjoy all the comfort and enchantment of our Mermaid Tours cruise. Swim with dolphins. Bask in year-round sunshine heaven. That's the one, I'd say. She nibbles the side of her mouth. Right, leave me alone now. I need to think. She won't show either of us what she's written. Says it'll jinx it, but something changes around the place after she's sent it off. We all start talking about what we'll do on our cruise holiday and what it'll be like. Mum and Dad get on. They even smile at each other occasionally. Even more bizarrely, they lay off having a go at me. For a few days. The closing date's in a week. But then the week's up and we don't hear anything. Another week passes and another, nothing. We haven't won. Mum's luck's run out after all. And gradually the sniping starts again and then the shouting at each other and getting at me every 5 minutes. Back to normal. And underneath it all is the looming truth that no one's saying out loud, that we're about to lose everything. But why should I expect anything different? It is my life we're talking about here. Oh, I haven't told you my name yet, have I? It's Mandy. Mandy Rushton. Chapter 2. I jumped out of bed. Shona was arriving today. Shona's my best friend. She's a mermaid. Full-time. Not just when she goes in the water like me. Back home, I mean back in Brightport, I used to sneak out at night to meet up with her. That was before anyone knew about me being a mermaid. Now we could see each other every day. I couldn't believe it when she said they were coming too. It was Neptune's idea. But I'd never met her parents and didn't know if they'd agree to it. Mind you, looking around me, it was hard to imagine anyone not wanting to come and live here. As long as you didn't go anywhere near the edge of the triangle. Well, I wasn't going to think about that today. I'd stick close to the coast, like Mum said, and everything would be all right. It all looked different this morning anyway. Nothing this beautiful could be dangerous. Maybe if I told myself that enough times, I'd believe it. Dad swam up to the trapdoor in the living room as I was getting some breakfast. "There's someone here for you, little un," he said. "And look, I got you something." He darted away as someone else appeared below me, someone with long blonde hair and a big smile. Shona. I shoveled a last spoonful into my mouth and jumped down through the trapdoor with a splash. My legs melted away, turning into a tail. "I couldn't wait to see you," Shona said, swimming towards me to hug me tight. I hugged her back. "When did you get here?" "Late last night." She nodded towards the porthole she'd swum through. "Althea brought me over to North Bay. She lives next door to us at Roxy Cove. Come and meet her."
"Here you are."
Dad swam back over, smiling broadly as he held something out to me. A doll. It had bright red spots on its cheeks, golden hair and a frilly pink tail. "Thanks, Dad. You like it?" he asked, anxiously tugging at his ear. "Sure, I'll play with it later, perhaps." I wanted to give you something like this years ago. I've been saving it, he said, his eyes going all misty and dreamy. They seemed to do that a lot. I don't know if he realized I was nearly 13. Once we were outside, I grimaced at Shona and she laughed. Then I had a pang of guilt. Hang on, I said. I swam back into the boat and kissed Dad on the cheek. It wasn't his fault I'd grown up without him. It wasn't his fault we hadn't worked out how to communicate with each other yet either. It would come. It had to. What's that for? He asked, lifting his hand to his cheek. I shrugged, smiling briefly. See you later, I said. Outside the boat, a mer-girl with jet-black hair tied back in a ribbon was waiting in the water with Shona. The ribbon looked as if it was made out of gold seaweed. Her tail was green with silver stars painted on the end. Shona turned to me. This is Althea. She's going to show us round the island. Great, I said, with a tight smile as a pang of jealousy hit me. How could I compete with a full-time proper mermaid with stars in her tail and gold seaweed in her hair? I was going to end up without a best friend again. We're picking up Marina first, Althea said. Shona linked my arm. That's Althea's best friend, she added, laughing as she read my mind. She does that sometimes. That's why she's such a brilliant best friend. Stay close to the coast here, Althea warned as we set off, doubling the fear that was already starting to gnaw at my insides. There's quite a current round the northern end of the island. As if I needed to be told that. I couldn't speak. My mouth was so dry it felt like it had sand in it. Althea pointed to the hill behind us. That's where a couple of the human families live, she said, pointing up at the white buildings I'd seen the day before. They look after allotments for the whole island. For a moment I wished I'd gone up to meet them yesterday after all. If I had, maybe I'd be looking around at everything with wide, innocent eyes like Shona was doing now, instead of waiting for something awful to happen. I had to shake the feeling away. I linked Shona's arm and smiled at her. Swimming on, I made sure we stayed as close to the shore as possible. We followed a low line of rocks that jutted out into the ocean.
That's Barracuda Point, Althea said.
Why is it called that? Shona asked.
You'll see, she smiled. Wait till we're on the other side.
We rounded the tip and swam on a bit further before Althea stopped. Okay, look now. We turned and looked back. Sharks alive, Shona gasped. I stared in silence. A low line of rocks twisted out from the shore, stretching out into a long, thin body. At the tip, it narrowed into a sharp point, dinted and creased along the middle, like a jawline filled with sharp teeth. Jagged rocks stood along the top like fins. Dark and menacing, it looked as though it could easily come to life with a snarling twist of its body. A cold shiver darted up my spine, prickling into my neck.
It's meant to protect the island, Althea said.
What from?
Everything. There's all sorts of bogeymers lurking, you know.
Really? I asked, shivering. Like what?
Althea laughed. It's just kids' stories, monsters and stuff.
Then she stopped smiling.
But there's something to them, I reckon. I've never been quite able to put my fin on it, but I've always had a sense of something... something below the surface.
Have you ever been pulled out to sea? I blurted out before I could stop myself.
What?
By the current, I faltered.
We avoid certain spots. We learn very quickly about that.
And what happens if you don't? I asked, holding my breath while I waited for her to answer. Althea lowered her voice.
The bogeymer will get you, she said.
Then she looked at my face and burst out laughing.
Come on, I'm only joking. It's kids' tales, like I said.
Then she turned suddenly, shaking her hair so it splashed onto the water, spreading golden droplets in an arc around her.
Come on, let's go and get Marina.
She moved on. As we swam, Shona gave me an occasional sideways look. I smiled at her and tried to act casual, but my body felt stiff and clumsy as I pushed myself through the sea. The water soon became warm and shallow and colourless as we skirted the edges of the island. No currents, nothing weird. Althea was right. We just had to avoid certain spots and everything would be fine. I began to relax. We came to a wide bay. Swimming into it, the water turned cool and deep. Twisted rock formations stood along the edges.
Double Arch Bay,
Althea said. Ahead of us, two giant arches were cut deep into the rocky shore. Althea ducked under to swim through one of them. Shona went next, then I flicked myself down and slipped through. We swam across a small reef. Neat clusters of plants and coral were dotted about like a well-tended park. An elderly merman with shiny blue eyes and a thin grey tail swam across them, snipping at weeds with a knife made from razor shells.
Hi, Theo,
Althea said. He nodded at us.
Morning, girls.
Theo's the gardener, Althea explained as he swam off to tie some wilting pink plants into a bundle with seaweed. There were archways everywhere. Some were tiny gaps in the rocks that I'd have missed if Althea hadn't pointed them out. Others, wide, jagged holes big enough for a whale to get through. Eventually we came to a shimmering purple rock with a neat round hole in the middle.
This is where Marina lives, Althea said.
She tapped a pink fish hovering at the entrance, a gold bell dangling from its tail. Immediately it wriggled its body and a delicate sound chimed out. A mermaid swam towards us from inside. She had curly red hair and a long gold tail with a shiny crescent moon painted on the end. Shona and Emily, she said, her freckled face creasing into a smile. Come in while I get my things. She grabbed Althea's hand and they went on ahead, along a narrow pathway lined with rough walls. It soon widened out into a wide living space, divided up by trails of fern and kelp. An older mermaid bustled past us. She had red hair like Marina's. Only hers was longer and frizzy. Her tail was bright yellow and tapered into soft white tassels at the end. Don't be out all day, Marina, she said. It's jelly deal souffle tonight and we're eating early. I've got my synchro swim class at 7. Then she smiled at Shona and me. Hello, girls, she added. Welcome to All Points Island. Shona and I smiled back before following the others into a small space with a soft seaweed bed and drapes all round it. A huge pink sponge was squashed into one corner, a crystal mirror in another. My room, Marina said. I sat on the sponge. It squelched and bubbled under me. Shona laughed. It's swishy. Swishy? That's Shona's word for everything she likes. Squishy, more like, I said as I tried to get up. Althea swam towards the entrance. Come on, she said. There's loads to show you. Marina grabbed a patchwork bag made of leaves and reeds, and we followed Althea through the arches and back out into the bay. We swam along stretches of rocky coastline, interspersed with coves of all shapes and sizes, some wide and sandy, others tiny, winding channels you could almost miss. Everywhere we looked, spots of sunlight bounced on the water. White, foamy waves washed gently over rocks. Palm trees reached gently out from marshmallow sand. High on the island, some people called down to us from a woody hill. In the sea, merfolk smiled and greeted us as we passed them. A couple of young merchildren playing piggyback rides on a dolphin waved and shouted to us. We waved back. A group of mermen diving for food nodded at us on their way out to sea. A mermaid with long, flowing hair streaming down her back smiled as she was pulled along by a swordfish on a lead. It was all so different. And yet so familiar. I belonged here. The fear that had gripped me yesterday floated further away with every new sight. Swimming on, we approached a half-hidden cave in the rocky shoreline. There are loads of caves on the island, but we only use a couple of them, Marina said. School's in one of them. The other's only for really major events like when Neptune comes. That's the Grand Caves. We can show you the other one, though, Emerald Cave. You want to see your school? Did I? Just the thought of school washed the smile off my face. But surely this couldn't be anything like Brightport High. No one was going to make fun of me here, or delight in making my life a misery. And it was a mermaid school. A mix of emotions swirled around inside me as I followed Althea into the cave. We inched along a narrow tunnel. As it twisted and turned, it grew darker and darker. Soon we were swimming in pitch blackness. Feel your way along the walls, Marina called from somewhere ahead of me. I ran my fingers along the craggy layered sides as I edged down the tunnel. Just as my eyes were getting used to the dark, the tunnel opened out and grew lighter. We came to a fork. Down here! Marina pointed along a tunnel that shimmered with green light. It led up into a deep pool inside the cave. Above us, the ceiling stretched high and jagged. Stalactites hung all around us, enormous pillars reaching almost to the water, tiny spindles spiking down like darts. Rocks glimmered and shone purple and blue and red. Next to the pool, smooth boulders were dotted about on the gravelly ground like an abandoned game of giant's marbles. A long scroll hung from the ceiling, pictures of underwater life drawn all over it, a pile of different coloured reeds underneath. A young mermaid was cleaning some hairbrushes lined up on a rocky ledge that jutted out across the water. She smiled at us as we gazed around.
Swishy, Shona said, swimming over to the hairbrushes. You have beauty and deportment.
Beauty and deportment. Shona had told me all about that. I'd be studying it with her soon, and diving and dance, and all the other mermaid subjects. No more long division.
Of course, Marina smiled. It's my favourite subject.
Mine too, Shona breathed.
Althea looked at me.
I prefer shipwreck studies.
Althea likes going out on geography reef trips, Marina laughed. Anything to skive her tide's tables.
It's beautiful,
Shona whispered as we took it all in. Much better than my old school.
And about a million light years away from mine, I added, trying not to think too hard about Brightport High.
There are two classes, Althea explained. This one's for the older kids, and there's another one for the babies.
Two classes?
Shona asked.
Is that all?
There's only about 30 families here altogether, Marina said. Mostly mer families and a few human ones.
Do they mix?
I asked. I realized I was holding my breath while I waited for the reply.
Yes, of course,
Althea said as she started swimming back out of the cave.
But they're kind of separate too, she blushed. If you get what I mean.
She glanced quickly at my tail. I got what she meant. I was the only one. Still the odd one out. The old fears resurfaced, hitting me like a punch in my stomach. I couldn't keep them away any longer. I'd never find a place where I could fit in.
But everyone gets on brilliantly, Marina said quickly, swimming across to touch my arm, and we're all really pleased you've joined us. The island's organising a party for you next week, once you've settled in.
We haven't had any new families here for ages, Althea added. Come on, let's show you the rest of the island.
They were organising a party, just for us. Or maybe I was wrong. Maybe things would work out after all.
We continued round the coast, Althea and Marina pointing out the sights all along the way. A hole in the ground that spouted orange flames in the summer, little channels leading to a maze of caves and caverns where some of the merfolk ran craft stalls. I made a mental note to tell Dad about that. At least it could be something for us to talk about. He'd learned to make jewellery while he was in prison. Maybe he could have one of the stalls. Swimming up the jagged east side of the island, we came to a channel leading into the rock.
Now this is something you must see, Althea said.
We set off in single file along the channel. The sides became steeper and higher as we swam. The water grew deeper and colder and so dark it was almost black. A soft wind whistled through the chasm. Then nothing. No movement, no sound. The sun beating silently down. I'd never experienced such stillness. As we wound our way along the channel, Althea and Marina kept pointing things out in our path. A fossil on the canyon wall, hairline cracks in the rocks making tiny channels that split off from the main one.
Look!
Althea pointed ahead to where the channel seemed to come to an end. I couldn't see anything at first, just a load of overgrown bushes and reeds lining the walls. Then I noticed what she was pointing at. A gap in the rock, through the reeds. There were pieces of driftwood attached to either side of the gap, virtually covered in plants and algae. We parted the reeds as though they were curtains and peered through the gap in the rock. On the other side, a shimmering blue lagoon sparkled with diamond glints. The water lay virtually still. Green fern hung down across gaping holes in the rock.
A group of flamingos gathered at the edge, standing motionless on spindly legs, long pink necks stretched straight and high. Two pelicans flew past, their wings reaching wide as they skimmed the water's still surface. It was like paradise. How you've always imagined paradise would look.
Swishy,
breathed Shona. I stared so hard my eyes watered. Marina looked nervous. Come on, we need to get back.
But we've just got here, I said.
We shouldn't be here at all.
Why not? There's nothing to say keep out, is there?
It's nice, Althea burst in, nudging Marina. And it's naughty to go there because we're not really meant to. She swam closer and lowered her voice. But you don't know that. You could go in and find out what it's like. I've always wanted to know.
I stared at the lagoon. I'm not sure, Shona said. I mean, if we're not allowed.
None of the kids are brave enough. We've been told not to go in there so many times, Althea said. But you haven't. You've only been here 5 minutes. Who's going to tell you off?
She's right, I said.
Althea smiled at me. Exactly, she said.
This could be just what I needed. My chance to make sure Althea and Marina would definitely be our friends. I knew I had Shona, but I couldn't run the risk of her being my only friend. I had to make sure I was popular this time. I wasn't going to be whispered about and made fun of again. If they wanted us to do it, well then, we would. Besides, it looked so tempting in there. I could almost feel it inviting me in.
Shona edged away from the reeds, her tail fluttering nervously.
Let's think about it, she said.
We dropped the reeds and drew back, but I couldn't get the image out of my mind. The stillness of the water, the ferns hanging down like delicate chains. We set off in silence. All around us, nature bustled. Tiny brown lizards raced across rocks. Crabs scuttled under large stones, sneaking into the safety of their hidden homes. Above us, white birds with long, sharp tails pecked at the cliff, disappearing into invisible holes in the rock. Eventually, the channel's walls widened once more, and the sun warmed our necks as we arrived back at the open ocean. When the others left us, Shona came back to North Bay with me. I grabbed her before we went into the boat.
We've got to go back, I said.
Oh, Emily, I don't know, Shona said. I mean, we've only just got here.
That's the whole point, I said.
Like Althea said, we're new, we don't know our way round, it will be easy for us to get lost. Think how impressed they'll be. Please.
Shona half smiled. It did look lovely, she murmured. And I suppose we haven't really had long enough to properly understand the rules yet.
Not long enough at all, I said, my tail flicking with excitement. We're just having a look round our new home. We're keen. We're a bit useless with directions and whoops, we've gone wrong. No one will be cross with us.
M. I'm the first one to the door when the postman arrives. I flick through the pile. Just more bills for Mum and Dad to argue about. But there's something else. A letter in a shimmery pink envelope. I turn it over. Mermaid Tours.
Mum! Dad!
They're at the door in seconds. Oh, my God, Mum says, snatching the letter from me. Who's going to open it? Her hands are shaking. You do it, love, Dad says. You wrote it.
He holds my hands. I'm shaking too.
It's probably just some junk mail or something, Mum says, tearing at the envelope. Let's not get excited.
She reads aloud. Thank you for entering our competition. We are delighted to inform you that you have won our...
Jack! Mum drops the letter and stares at Dad. I pick the letter up and read on. Delighted to inform you that you have won our Bermuda and the Caribbean cruise holiday. You and your family will spend a fortnight aboard one of our luxury ships and experience all the delights of a Mermaid Tours holiday. Many congratulations and have a good trip. For a second, there's silence. Then Mum grabs me and screams. She pulls me into a tight squeeze. She's jumping up and down. We won! We won! She yells. We're going on holiday! Oh, my God! We won! We won!
I jump up and down too with her for a second till I can hardly breathe. She's holding me too tight. I pull away. Mum grabs Dad round the neck and kisses him.
Kisses him? I don't think she's done that for about 5 years.
It worked. She won us a holiday. Maybe they'll get on again and everything will be all right. For a couple of weeks, at least.
2 weeks away from this dump. Wonder if anyone will notice I've gone.
Julie might. She's kind of my best friend, not that she acts like it. She never really wanted to be my best friend. She always preferred that loser, Emily Windsnap. At least she's not around anymore.
I wonder what happened to her and her mum. One day they were here, the next they'd gone. Took the boat and everything.
Well, good riddance. All she ever did was ruin things for me and make me look stupid. She got me into trouble years ago when she told on me for cheating in the arcade.
I wasn't even cheating, I was trying to help her. Trying to be nice.
Taught me not to bother trying that again in a hurry. It never works. Best just to keep your mouth shut and not get your hopes up. Anyway, we're out of here. We're going on a cruise.
Chapter 3
We swam side by side to begin with. Below us, occasional shoals of parrotfish and bright red snappers swept across the sandy bed. When the channel narrowed, I swam ahead, slinking along the silent passageway. The ground soon became uncluttered, clear golden sand beneath us, the sun shining down almost directly above our heads. Two silhouetted mermaid figures gliding along below the surface, our shadows came and went, appearing briefly before suddenly growing distorted with the splash of a tail breaking the water's still surface. We came to the curtain of reeds draped down the channel's walls and the algae-coated wooden plaques. Trying not to let Shona see my quivering hands, I parted the curtain and looked through the hole in the wall. The water sparkled and fanned out into a wide lagoon. Ferns hung down over cracks and gaps in the wall. A white tropic bird flew into a hole behind me, its long tail disappearing into the rock. Nothing else moved. Shona stared. I turned to her. Ready? My voice shook. She broke her gaze to look at me. Let's just get this over with. I glanced around to check no one had followed us, then I squeezed through the gap and swam into the lagoon. The sun burned down, heating my neck and dancing on the water. Its light rippled below us in wavy lines across the ground. As we slid across the stillness, the water grew colder and murkier. When the lagoon narrowed back into a channel, I couldn't see my reflection swimming along below me anymore. The walls lining our trail had lost their hardness. They were like chalk. I stopped and scraped my finger down the sides. Rock crumbled in my hand. The channel walls stretched upwards, cold and grey and deserted.
Emily!
Shona was pointing at something ahead, an engraving on the wall, a perfect circle with a fountain spiralling out from the centre. It looked like a Catherine wheel, full of energy, almost as tall as us.
Look at this!
Shona had swum ahead while I stared at the engraving. I joined her in front of some ferns loosely covering a hole in the rock. The hole disappeared below the surface. We dived down. Under the water, it was just big enough to swim into.
Cool,
I grinned at her. A secret tunnel reaching into the rock. Shona, we have to see what's in there. She frowned.
Althea and Marina will be so impressed. No one else has dared do it.
And before she had a chance to argue, I'd slithered into the slimy, echoey darkness. Eventually, I heard her follow behind. The winding tunnel led us deeper and deeper into dead rock, tight, cold and claustrophobic, but gradually widening and growing brighter as we swam. Bit by bit, a growing circle of light opened up ahead of us. We swam towards it, finally coming out into a dome-shaped space in the middle of the cave. A high ceiling rippled faintly with the water's reflection.
"I don't understand," Shona said, looking around. "What's that light?"
I shook my head as we swam all around the rocky edges. It seemed to be coming from under the water.
Come on!
I dived down. That's our answer! I gasped. The floor of the cave was absolutely littered with crystals and stones and gold, all shining so brightly I almost had to shield my eyes.
I'd never seen jewels like these.
Dazzling pink rocks with sharp white edges lay on the ground in a circle, joined together by a thin line of gold.
In their centre, a bright blue stone shaped like a rocket pointed up to the surface of the water.
What in the ocean?
Shona swam round and round the display, her mouth open, her eyes huge, shining with the reflection of the blue stone. I looked round. There was more. Once we started looking, it seemed that stones and crystals covered the entire floor of the cave, packed and tucked into gaps in the rock all around us.
Emily, I think we need to get back.
A fat green angelfish hovered between us, startled eyes staring into ours before it spun round and disappeared into a rocky crevice.
We've seen it now. We're not meant to be here.
I stopped gazing around. Shona was right. Okay, I said, let's go back. We'd found the answer to Althea and Marina's questions. The lagoon hid a cave filled with jewels.
But why? It didn't make sense.
Shona turned immediately and started making her way back towards the tunnel. But then I noticed something on the cave's wall. A picture exactly like the engraving we'd seen earlier, only even bigger. It looked like a mosaic. As we got closer, I could see it was made out of jewels, a huge golden one in the centre, oval-shaped and about half as tall as me, with multicoloured strands spinning outwards from it. I put my hand out to touch it. It wobbled.
Shona! Come on!
She carried on swimming. I pushed at the jewel. It was lodged in the rock, but only loosely. We could probably get it out. I had to try. There was a secret in here, I was sure of it.
Shona! I called again. Just look at this!
She stopped swimming and turned.
It's loose!
I pulled at it, edging my fingertips underneath it to lever it up.
Help me!
She swam reluctantly back to me.
I thought we were sharks!
You thought we were sharks? Shona stared at the mosaic.
What is it? Help me get it out! You're pulling my tail, aren't you? We can't go round vandalising the place.
We're not vandalising anything. We'll put it back. Let's just see what's behind it. An image of Althea and Marina's faces flickered across my mind, their eyes wide and impressed with my bravery. I might even end up being the girl everyone wanted to be friends with, instead of the weedy one who got picked on by the class bully. This cave was going to change my life. I just knew it. Shona sighed heavily, then reluctantly dug her fingers under the jewel, and we gradually levered it bit by bit out of its hole. A moment later we were holding it between us. We lowered it down to the ground and it plopped onto the seabed with a soft thunk, scattering a shower of sand in a swirl around us.
Now what?
Shona stared down at it. I swam up to the hole it had left behind and poked my head into it. Another tunnel. I grabbed Shona's arm, pointing into the blackness. We have to go down there.
We don't have to go anywhere, Shona snapped. Please, aren't you dying to know what's in there? Can't you feel it?
This wasn't even about Althea and Marina anymore. It was more like a thirst or a magnet pulling me. A magnet? My throat closed up as I remembered. But it couldn't lead to the triangle. We were in the middle of the island. There was no current here, no danger. Shona peered into the tunnel. Her eyes sparkled against the reflection of the crystals. I could see the dilemma in them.
We'll just have a quick look, see what's there, and then we go home, she said eventually.
Deal. We edged our way carefully into the hole, slithering along in the silent dark. Me first, Shona following closely behind. The tunnel grew colder as we edged deeper into the rock. The edges became craggy and sharp. And then, without warning, it suddenly stopped. A dead end.
Now what? I called round to Shona. We go back. We've looked. There's nothing here, and I'm not exactly surprised or disappointed. Come on.
How could it suddenly end like that?
I was sure it was leading somewhere.
I felt around on the rock in front of me. It was different from the walls. Smoother. I inched my hands around it. Then I realised why it was different.
Shona, it's a boulder!
What?
There's something blocking the tunnel. Look, it's different from the walls. Feel it!
Shona squeezed forwards to touch the boulder. I felt my way around its edges.
There's a crack all around it.
It was almost the same shape as the crystal at the other end. Maybe it'll come loose. Shona looked at me.
Let's just try. How do I let you talk me into these things?
She said with another sigh.
Because you can feel it too. Because there's something down here that's making you tingle with excitement. Because the last time we went exploring, we ended up finding my dad. Because being my friend meant you got to live on a beautiful desert island. Because...
Okay, enough.
Shona half frowned, half